Just that we have the chance now to, I've never had a Portuguese guest on my show. How would you say in Portuguese, welcome to the Velocino podcast?
Bem-vindos ao podcast Velocino.
Oh my goodness, it sounds so good. I think I adopt this. Right?
It sounds so much better.
Hello and welcome to the Velocino Cycling Podcast, where the best stories have not yet been written. Today to another episode with our friends from Das Hutchinson Brother UK, a very new team that has merged out of two different teams from the previous season. In the last week, we spoke to Tiffany Keep and Charlotte Hodgkins-Byrne already. So today we have two fantastic new guests, and it takes us all the way to Portugal and Manchester. Welcome to the show, Vera Vilaça and Frankie Hall.
Hi.
Hi.
Just that we have the chance now to, I've never had a Portuguese guest on my show. How would you say in Portuguese, welcome to the Velocino podcast?
Bem-vindos ao podcast Velocino.
Oh my goodness, it sounds so good. I think I adopt this. Right?
It sounds so much better. Yeah.
Oh, that's so, so good. I might just rebrand the podcast and stuff and just, you know, have the full opening in Portuguese. So good. As I mentioned earlier, first of all, you are two new riders for this new team, Das Hutchinson Brother UK. And this time again, we are spread out across the world. So with Vera being in Portugal and Frankie, you told me before, you're actually in Manchester. But you are usually from Loughborough, right?
I'm based in Loughborough. I went there when I went to university and have never really left. I'm just over in Manchester because we start racing on the track tomorrow. So getting ready for that.
Yep, got national track champs tomorrow. I have the scratch tomorrow, individual pursuit on Saturday, and then the points race on Sunday.
This is so cool. All the best. I will definitely cross
Thank
my
you.
Fingers. And
yeah.
Both of you are in academics as well, right? Because Frankie, you just mentioned University of Loughborough. You did just your master's.
Yeah, so I've just dropped my airball. So I did my undergrad there, and then I did a master's, and I've actually just started a PhD as well.
In sports science or mathematics?
So my undergrad was in maths. My master's was in exercises medicine, so a bit of a cross, and then my PhD is in exercises in physiology.
That's so amazing. So it will be Dr. Frankie Hall. Can you come to the start line, please?
At some point, not in anywhere near future. It's a very long project, many years that's, away, but potentially.
Really cool. And you can put it on your credit card as well, I think, doctor.
Yeah, put it everywhere, apparently.
So good. And Vera, I think you're also in academics, right?
I'm in medical school. I just finished my fourth year, so I have 2 years left until I can be a doctor as well.
That also obviously opens a lot of doors, I guess, for afterwards to, you know, like if you want to remain in the sport, to remain in the sport in some sort of way. It's really nice to hear. Really, really great.
Yeah.
And Vera, you are, so we touched on a little bit now that Frankie is, by the way, did you know there's about seven different ways to abbreviate Francesca in English, because that's your real name, right?
Yeah. What are they? Tell me.
So it's Fran, Cesca,
yeah.
Chess,
yeah.
Chessie, yeah. Francie,
yeah.
Frankie.
Yeah.
Is there one more? There must be one more. There was one more. On my list, there was one more.
The only other name I get called quite a bit is Frank.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, people call me Franks quite a lot. It's either Franks or Frankie. So, I only get called Francesca by my mom if I'm in trouble, really.
I know that. This is my kids also. They have three first names, but we only use them when they're really in trouble. That's
yeah.
So good. And how did Frankie stick?
I don't know, to be honest. I have a different name in my family. But I think when I went to school, people just started calling me Frankie, and then that was it when I was much younger. Yeah, I don't really know. It just kind of happened, and here it still is.
That's so amazing. And with Vera, there's also something special with your name, because obviously first and surname starts both with a V. And the V, I think, is very popular in your family because I think you have a brother called Vasco.
Yeah, that's true. We're both VV, so we've been known for that. But it was sort of random at first. My parents just liked the name Vera, and they called me that. And then my brother came along, and they were like, oh, we might as well stick with it. So it looks nice now.
Vera Vilasca, Vera Vilaza, Vera Vilaza for Velocino. I absolutely love that. So cool. As we just mentioned, so Vera, you have a background in triathlon, and actually I think the way that you got into cycling was through injury. Is this correct?
Sort of. I started triathlon really early. I started when I was 8 years old with my brother as well, and just always did it. Was always good in my age group, and just moved through the ranks, started racing as a youth, then as a junior and elite, and I really enjoyed it. I did like the European circuit, a few World Cup races, but I kept almost every year I kept having a pretty big injury, mostly due to running, which led me to be a better swim biker. And I always really enjoyed doing the training that I wasn't allowed to do on the run. I like to do it on the bike. And then from that, actually, through COVID, after 2020, there weren't a lot of races to do. So I decided to try a few cycling races. And then the Tour of Portugal also had its first edition in 21. And I did it and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, maybe I should just try cycling and stop being injured all the time.
Do you still do a lot of swimming then? Because it sounded as if this was also one thing that you really enjoyed in triathlon.
I really enjoyed it. And I used to be a good swimmer. Now, not as much, because if you don't swim for a week, it's bad. If you don't swim for 2 years, it's even worse. But I do a bit of training. I go to the pool like once or twice a week. I used to run, but then I keep getting like small injuries or pains and niggles. So my coach doesn't allow me to run anymore, which is a smart thing. So I only run in the off season, but I like swimming. I think it's a nice complement to cycling.
Definitely. I think, so I did a couple of half Ironmans, 3 or 4. I forgot now. I think it was 3, always in Mallorca, because I thought it's brutal anyway, so let's rather do it where it's warm and where the road quality is nice and stuff like this. So I wouldn't do that in the UK. I wouldn't go swimming here and then go on the pothole roads. Like, no, I don't do that. But I remember like when what you said earlier with swimming, I feel you have to keep on swimming like every week, otherwise you just stagnate and just really get slower, I guess. And really, really cool.
Yeah, we call it feeling for the water. If you lose the feel, you're just not moving, and you just have to do it every day.
It doesn't sound as if you miss the running much, really.
I miss running. I don't miss being injured. I did it for so many years, and I was when I decided to move into cycling, I was really happy with my triathlon career. I could have done more, but I could have done a lot less. So I don't want to go back. Like, I'm satisfied with it, and I'm all into cycling now.
When you changed your training from being a triathlete, where it was like multiple disciplines that you had to somehow factor in, now to just one discipline, how has your training regime changed? Because I guess before you were already a fast cyclist. How do you change it to become even more fast without overdoing it?
Yeah, one of my biggest fears was once I focused only on cycling, being a worse cyclist than I was as a triathlete. I was scared of it. And when I changed, I kept my same coach, and he's a triathlon coach, so he didn't really have that much experience with cycling, and neither did I. So we were both just trying to work around it. He was willing to help me, and we found out the things together. I think my only issue is that I was training consistently like 25 to 30 hours in triathlon, and I try to do that with cycling because I was scared of training too little. But then I realized that maybe doing that much only of cycling is a bit too much. So I had to learn to be okay with training less volume in terms of just the number of hours, but still getting in good training. But I think it gave me a background to be able to handle more training. So yeah, that was good.
Less hours, just more focus on cycling.
Yeah, and it totally is less hours because I don't need to be doing 27, 28 hours of just riding.
Mainly outdoors, I guess, right? Because where you live, it's always sunny in Portugal, right?
The weather is really nice. When I have my studies, sometimes I have to train indoors because it's dark. But yeah, I'm not complaining about the weather.
And so it's just because for our listeners, they don't know because we discussed it before, you are in the Lisbon area, close to the coast, I think, right? Just to make everybody jealous, very close to the coast.
Yeah, very close to the coast, riding by the sea every single day.
Finishing off every training session with a cocktail.
With a coffee.
So good. Yeah, Frankie, the question, so we just mentioned earlier that you will have your nationals tomorrow on the track. So one thing that I was always wondering, most people, I think, believe, yeah, it's just cycling, right? It's the same. You just go from one to the other. It's just cycling, but it's quite different, right? Because on the one hand side, you basically go in the velodrome and you just have like a fixed gear bike, and then if you go outside, it's like a complete different ballgame because you are basically in a group of a peloton where you ride with gears on changing surfaces.
Yeah, and brakes. I'd say the brakes is maybe the biggest difference. Yeah.
So how does this impact your training routine? Like when you, like the nationals as an example, would you then predominantly train indoors on, like, not on the turbo trainer? But
I'm probably not the best person to ask because in the UK especially, track riding and velodrome riding, if you're not on the national program supported by British Cycling, it's really quite inaccessible. It's incredibly expensive, and the amount of track time available isn't actually very good at all. So for me, I don't change my training at all. I go in across the whole winter with a pure road focus. I've been fortunate enough to spend most of my winter in Spain.
Where about?
I've chopped and changed around a bit. I did 2 weeks out in Mallorca at the beginning of winter, and then I was in Calpe for on and off for 5 or 6 weeks, and then I went to Girona for 10 days before heading back to the UK mainly because I ran out of days. And
90 days it is, right?
Yeah, 90 days were allowed. So I actually haven't done any specific track training before last week. So it's going to be a bit of a shock to my system because I've been doing a lot of road focus, a lot of long miles. The way that I work with my coach is that November, December, and mainly most of January is a lot of long, easy miles. We don't do very much intensity at all. We've just learned over the past couple of years that that's what works for me. Like doing a big base means it actually pushes up a lot of my thresholds without the need to be doing any really hard sessions. So yeah, it doesn't impact my road training at all. The only difference is that obviously I've had a taper into nationals when a lot of other people, like the rest of our team, are on a camp at the moment doing a big road block. But I've then been able to get some VO2 stuff in, some higher intensity stuff. I've had a crash course in technical track riding this week. Had Monday and Tuesday a lot of time on the track. And then I just use the weekend. It's purely, like, last year I was lucky I got a good result. But, yeah, it's predominantly just a weekend of getting a huge VO2 stimulus because we start racing on the road the following week. So, yeah, I use it as, like, an easy way to get some race intensity in without having to go abroad to do some wet, cold races, because it'll also be like late 20s and dry, but just indoors and artificial heat in the velodrome.
Oh, and very condensed or compressed air, I felt. I've tried it once. I really struggled breathing.
Yeah, there's I'll leave this weekend with something called, they call it a pursuiter's cough or a track cough, just because the air is so dry and the heating's on, and like they try and keep all the doors closed because it helps with like the pressure and the temperature, and it's a breeding ground for illness. So I go back into COVID ways and walk around with a mask on everywhere just because I really don't want to get ill before then heading out to race.
I can imagine. Well, you definitely crossing our fingers. First of all, that you will race well, and then second of all, that you stay healthy.
Yeah,
well.
Thank you.
So if you would have to separate like both road and track racing is your passion, and road cycling is your thing that you love doing. Well, that's the same, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the same thing. But I think track I enjoy because it's warm. But I think it's a really good tool coming into the road. I don't have enough race experience to go from the end of the road season straight into, like, my first race is in 1.1. I don't have enough race experience to jump straight into that, having not ridden in a bunch, having not raced and been in a big peloton. So for me, we use it as a tool to get your eye in and get a feel for how you're feeling in a bunch. And like, it's quite similar to the pointy end of a road race when it's like, it's hard, fast, like it's a really high intensity race. I think if the season's crossed over, and it's why I don't pursue track any further, because a lot of the professional track riding is now across the summer and it crosses over with the road. And I don't think you can be competitive, or like the top people who have the infrastructure and support to train both and the track time to do both, it is possible. But for someone outside of the program, it's not possible to get enough track time at the right times. I mean, for the majority of people, you can't afford it. Like personally, I couldn't afford to spend all year on the track. So we just use it as a tool coming into the beginning of the road season. While I was at university, I was a scholar, and part of my scholarship was I had to compete in Bucks. So I had another track meet. It's actually next weekend. So it all worked in well as training for that. But yeah, this year, this will be the only time that I race on the track. So it's not worth investing too much into it. It's just a really good tool, and it is a really good weekend. I come out of it with a massive training stimulus. It's nice to see everybody. It's very sociable, although nerve-wracking. And I think it's just, yeah, good to get like that first race under the way with something where there's a little less pressure and it's not a focus. So there's not a massive, it's not a be-all and end-all if you have a bad race and you just get one out of the way.
That sounds really good. Yeah, interestingly, like with this accessibility, I was always wondering that how do you even get into the track cycling? I understand there must be like from British Cycling and stuff, like operating cost of running all these, you know, sessions and stuff. But at the same time, and this is not necessarily a question because I don't want to put you into shaky waters and saying something wrong, but I feel like they're limiting quite a lot of the talent pool here. Like if more people would have more access to that, I guess there would be many, many more people that might actually go through the ranks into contention for like a British Cycling spot potentially. But yeah
I completely agree, and I think for riders who come into it a lot older, it's really hard. You have to know people or have a way in somehow if you weren't on the system, or if you didn't ride as a junior or under 23 and go through the academy. To be honest I would have no idea how it works or where to start, or it, from the outside, it appears like a very closed system, but I don't know how it works, or I don't know the ins and outs of it.
You have to build a little velodrome in the garden then.
just a little one.
Exactly. So good. So we touched up on that. So both of you haven't been on the training camp in just north of Kalpe, I think, where they were somewhere.
Yeah, they're in Altea, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it's north of Kalpe. I just made this up, but somewhere in this area. And so both of you have not I think, Frankie, you moved half season to...
Yeah, I moved across to the team in August last year.
Yeah.
So I had the second half of last season with the team.
So you know some people already?
Yeah, so I know all the staff and then riders who were on the team last year. And then the new British riders as well. It's quite a close-knit circuit, yeah. The elite. I think it'll be the same in every country, but you're at the same races every week. So everybody knows everybody. It's always the same people that you see. So I know the other girls as well.
So cool. And for Vera, for you, it's, I guess you don't know any of them, right?
No, I haven't actually.
You were in Massi, right, last year?
Yeah, I was in Massi Tactic, a Spanish team. And I've raced with a few of the girls from the team because they did a few Spanish races. But I haven't met anyone personally. It was a shame that I couldn't go to the training camp, but in the first race of the season, I'll get to meet some of them. And hopefully throughout the year, I'll meet everyone.
Immediately, next question. So with Tiffany, although she's from South Africa, I know that she was spending a lot of time in the UK. So she knew already quite a lot of races for the same reasons what Frankie just mentioned, I guess. And then also she was part of one of the merging teams already. How did they find you?
So actually, I was in the Spanish team, which is the usual way for the Portuguese riders, especially girls. There are no professional or continental teams in Portugal, so you just go to Spain. And I raced there for a year, and I enjoyed it, and I was going to stay. But then the Spanish Federation made these new rules, which meant that out of like the six continental teams they had, four of them couldn't keep their license for this season, for 2024. And Massi was one of them. So I was going to stay with the team, but then in October they told me, okay, we're just going to be a national team next year. So then I started looking at teams and looking at options. And I'd always seen myself more as a rider that would enjoy the races in Northern Europe. I'd seen the races in the UK and everything, and I was really curious about it. So I decided to email a few teams, and thankfully DAS answered me, and I had a meeting with them telling them what I enjoyed about the type of racing and why I thought it would be a good fit for me. And fortunately, they took me in, one of the few foreigners in the team, but it's going to be an interesting year.
By the way, I don't know if you heard in the last podcast this specific bit that Charlotte actually mentioned. She said like one of the really interesting bits for her is that the team is so international, and she absolutely loves that, to get to know riders from other countries, just because of the stories might be different, how they got into cycling and the challenges that they had to overcome to get to where they are and stuff. I think this is really cool. So
yeah, the racing experiences are also quite different.
I think that's one massive benefit, is we've got a few people from different countries, and it just brings a wealth of experience of different types of racing, because the UK, it's very, it's really hard racing, but I think it's a very specific type of racing that we have in the UK compared to European racing. So we come into the European races quite sheltered from how they're raced. So I think, yeah, it's a massive benefit to have riders from different racing backgrounds.
I can imagine. And do I say something wrong when I say in the UK a lot is based around crits, because it's quite difficult actually to close roads for road racing?
Yeah, we have got a fair few road races, but crits is where it's easiest, because like for me, I've made a vow really once the season starts to not do any what we call national B level racing, which is where the roads aren't closed, because it's just so dangerous. The organizers do their best, and like the race organizers are amazing, and the volunteers, but the British car drivers, yeah, they will do anything. Like there's these massive big red flags, big red everything, like people in high vis everywhere, and the cars just see it as an opportunity to annoy people, and like they'll drive the wrong way around the circuit. I've heard things like, how dare you block this road, it's the only road into the pub. Like honestly, the things that
how
you hear,
dare you, come on.
Yeah, how dare you. Or like, it's the busiest day, it's a local derby where I don't know, two football teams in Chesterfield in the middle of the peaks are playing a match, and you're blocking the fastest way to get to the football pitch. So yeah, I think crits are where it's easiest for British cycling to run races. The crit scene is good, especially in the women. Actually, there's always full fields, it's always like, it's hard racing, and it's really like positive racing as well. So yeah, we are crit focused, I guess.
My wife was dipping her toes a little bit into racing like years and years ago, far before we had kids and stuff, and we were both a bit younger as well. And at that time, the team that she was racing for was organizing some of the like road races in our area, and I always tried to support and be then like, for instance, driving the commissaire vehicle and stuff. And the stuff that I've seen is just like so appalling, and I would love to say, no, you are exaggerating. This is not... it is exactly that. Like, we had, like, I think 3 or 4 cars behind me with, like lights on. There was a bunch, like a peloton right in front of us. Also, we had announced in this area with, like, letters and leaflets that there will be a race, like, weeks ahead. There were, like, signs everywhere. And still people were trying to overtake all the cars and the racers.
Yeah.
I remember one person even reversed on that day, although the road was closed, out of a drive into, like, oncoming riders. And I'm like,
yeah,
how is this possible in a nation that is so known for their, you know, fantastic cycling superstars, really, right? Like Geraint Thomas, Bradley Wiggins, like all these kind of like fantastic athletes that should actually raise the profile of riding, right? Sorry, I just mentioned a couple of male riders. Obviously, there's like many, many, many more. And it's just like really appalling. Is it the same in Portugal? Is it a little bit more relaxed?
No, I mean, we don't have that many women's races in Portugal. We have like 4 national cups, and then we have the Tour of Portugal. But all the roads are always closed. There are no issues with cars. The races are really well organized. And it's interesting because they're not, like, they're funded by a very small federation that doesn't have a big budget. They usually don't have sponsors. And they can put on like really safe races. And it's the same that happens in Spain. Like the races in Spain, you never see a problem with drivers or anything. But I did notice, like, once we went to France, it wasn't like that. Last year we had the Tour of Pyrenees. That was like, there's a big discussion about it because the roads were open and all of the World Tour teams were there. They were preparing the Tour de France. And then all of a sudden we have cars in the middle of the bunch and they just didn't care, and I think they did it on purpose. We had like oncoming cars into the bunch. But yeah, those girls in the World Tour, they were not okay with it. They stopped the race and they said they wouldn't race in those conditions.
Absolutely crazy.
So I can't imagine having that regularly in the UK.
Think about, like, right, especially in France, like Tour de France is like the biggest cycling event in the world, right? Like anyhow, like I think it's, yeah, we had a couple of episodes about this kind of topic in the past, and I think it's, there's idiots everywhere. Vera, you mentioned earlier that you sent this email to the team to actually get into the team, and you mentioned that you listed, like, what kind of rider you are and what do you think where you are good. So what is it? Are you happy to share this? Like, what do you think, what kind of rider you are?
What I said is that I'm an all-rounder rider, but I'm more of a roller than a pure climber, which is something I realized in the Spanish races, because you have a lot of really long climbs and really small girls, and it's hard to climb with them. But I always did well in the races that were more rolling. I'm not going to say I enjoy it, but I do better when the weather is worse, so when it's cold and rainy.
Come
and
to the UK.
I think we're going to get a few races like that.
Coming to the right place.
I don't know if I should have thrown myself into it, because racing in sun is more fun. But yeah, one of the races that I did best at, it was a World Tour race in the Basque Country. And it was raining. The weather was horrible. And I saw myself climbing with Annemiek van Vleuten. And I was like, okay, I like this.
That's amazing. I think Annemiek van Vleuten is one of the people that she really enjoys having a hard race. So would you say you are similar? Like really making the like tough conditions and making it difficult for everyone else?
Yeah, I think when it's tough, I like to make it even tougher. Maybe that's it.
I like that. I'm not that kind of person, but I like watching this kind of stuff.
And then the crit racing has always appealed to me, because I did ITU triathlon, which is usually small circuits, a lot of like U-turns and turns and in city centers. And it's not really bunch riding. It's more like attacking out of every corner. And I did that for so many years that I thought it would suit me to do that in cycling as well.
Nice. Nice. So you like rolling hills, climbing, you like difficult conditions, weather-wise and race-wise, and you like little punches out of the corners. Very technical.
Yeah. And nice. Technical, yes.
Nice. That's so good. And Frankie, I just heard from earlier when you mentioned, when you were talking about track cycling, you were mentioning towards the punchy end of a race. Is this like are you like more a sprinter?
No, I wouldn't call myself a sprinter. Like, I'm quite small. Mm. It's a bit of an unknown how I seem to go right on the track, because I'm really small. I'm 5'1" on a good day, and I don't weigh very much. So I go up hills quite fast. But then because of the work that I do on the track and I'm in the gym a lot, I can sprint as well. So like a bit of a puncher and can kind of do whatever job I'm needed to do. But I anything with an uphill finish, then I'm okay. But yeah, I very much like an uphill. I'd be happy as Larry playing in the hills all day. Long climbs is pretty much my calling. Send me up a climb that's at least 40 minutes long and I'm in heaven. But it's kind of still finding my feet a bit about what kind of rider I am. When I moved in August, it was the first time that I'd ridden in a team. And before that, I've been in a team setup, but once we got into the race, it was very much individual. There were only ever maybe one or two other riders in the kind of front of the race, so we were never able to ride as a team together. And I was purely riding and racing on my own against teams. So I kind of had to do everything. I had to climb, I had to sprint, I had to mark moves, I had to do everything, which has led me in to be very good at doing that role within the team. And yeah, over this year, kind of hoping to find my feet about how I would label myself as a rider and what my end role would be.
The team before August was Loughborough Lightning, right?
Yeah.
Nice, yeah. Nice. Really nice kit, by the way. I really like it.
Yeah, really pretty kit. Yeah, pink and purple really, kit.
So
yeah.
Cool. It looks like a Lightning. Looks super fast. Really, really nice. But you still race the nationals for them, right? And although you were, I think, then alone, you still did pretty well. I think to remember, was it top 20?
Yeah, I did all right. I had a good ride at national champs, and that was probably my standout ride of the year, although I made a lot of mistakes in the crit in terms of how I rode it. I was definitely on kind of the best form that I've been on all season. And again, the road race was hilly and it was attritional and it was really hard. And it became a race, a very much a race of attrition, where it was less tactical with the bigger teams because it was so hard that only the strongest people were kind of left in the peloton. So yeah, that really suited me. And yeah, I rode that with Loughborough, and then it was kind of the week or two after that that I went across. We did some of the national crit series. I got a fourth or a fifth at Ilkley, and then the following week I went across to Duss, in that time period where we have like 20 races in 3 weeks. It was in there somewhere.
How did this happen then? So was the move to Duss a result of your performances of the nationals, do you think? Or
yeah, so I'd looked up to them as kind of one of the leading British teams for a long time. I'd followed them since I started getting into cycling. I had friends who were riding for them in various forms throughout the years of their previous incarnations. And I'd been speaking, or I'd contacted Andy and Simon probably from maybe 2 years prior, when I really started to want to get into riding. And then I had a big conversation with them at the end of last season as well. And quite rightly, they just told me, you just got still a few things to work out. We'll keep an eye on you, watch you how you go through the season. And I kind of just delivered on the targets that they'd set me to work on and prove that I could contribute and provide like a useful, like bring something to the team that they didn't already have at that stage, or through injury and illness, they'd lost a few riders. And so got in contact with them. Like, I just kind of kept in contact with them, two very friendly faces. And as I said earlier, like, you see the people in it, you see them at the races every week. They watch you race every week. And then, yeah, it was after Nationals and the National Series that we decided that it would be
like it would be a good time to move across.
That's so nice. I feel it's really a good thing if you have this conversation and they tell you like, yeah, you're good. However, this and this and this is missing. So where you're really like putting this basically on a little like note, putting it right next to your bed and like, okay, this is what I have to work on. I think this is quite a good target to chase.
Yeah, and it's like I come from an analytical background. I like maths and everything is like I'm quite I take criticism very constructively. So I always welcome like people telling me how I can be better or what I can do, like how I can improve and like how my brain works is like, okay, well, what could I do better? This might be good, but is there something we can do more efficiently? Like I myself look at it from like the scientific side, the like physiology performance side, and then I'm very open and aware that I have not got a lot of race experience, so I look to like more experienced people like the team managers for that, and just yeah, take it all on board. So I really enjoy it, and even the few races I had at the back end of last year with the team, I learned so much just from the other girls. And it was really useful for me to have these like mini targets to focus on and work through throughout the year. And then, yeah, it was very nice to be able to move across once I started getting the results that we'd spoken about.
That's amazing. I really like it. So there's a couple of buttons and you just have to tweak them. So, and
yeah,
at least somebody gave you these buttons. Otherwise you would tweak and you wouldn't know what to tweak.
Yeah, and that's what I really admire about the team as well, is that most people will just point blank ignore you unless they can, like, unless you can offer them something immediately, they'll just won't even look at anything. Whereas, yeah, the benefit of being week in, week out at the same races is that they do get to see that progression and the potential and everything that you can bring, and get to know you as a person as well. Because I think one thing that's really key in the team is like how the team interacts, and I think Simon and Andy have done really well in keeping like a really positive, supportive environment within the team.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
For everyone.
That's so important, I guess. It's so important. Vera, there was this one thing now that Frankie mentioned, just like a couple of things she had to learn new. Like I was wondering, from triathlon, where you basically you are like a single person army, and now you move into like a team, what were the things that you needed to learn from scratch? Because all of a sudden there was like completely, you didn't even think of this stuff that this is part of cycling. Or what are the things that you still think you might need to improve on? If you want to share that, it's just like, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, no, it was a huge difference. The only thing I had from triathlon were the legs, because the racing is completely different. And my first year fully in cycling, I was in a national team. So the races were, I had a team, but we didn't really need to work together that much. And the level's not that high. And I got to learn a little bit how to ride in a bunch and about like planning nutrition for these longer races and everything. But in the last year with Massey and going into a continental team that is quite a high level team, I had really strong teammates. I had to learn everything super quickly. I went into the training camp in January and I thought I was fit. I was fitter than I have been. And on the first ride, first climb, I get dropped and I was just going full gas every day. And it's not because I wasn't strong enough, but there is like just so much to learn about how to ride and how to manage your effort and everything. And I got thrown into a 1.1 race, the first race of the season. And everything was really new. So I had to learn how to ride in a bunch that is not like 10 people in a triathlon circuit in one line attacking out of corners. And it's a 100 people, and everyone's touching you and you don't have any personal space anymore. And then I had to learn about team tactics. I'd always been a fan of sport. I knew about it, but I'd never done it. And last season I got to work with a really strong team. I had really strong like climbers in the team. So I got to work for them with strong team tactics, and where it was important for me to like actually lead out. Like if we had a 10K climb, I had to do 2K all out for me just to set them up and to have like keep a good pace for them. And I really enjoy doing that, trying to understand that it's my race. The race might be 100K, but if my part is 50K, I got to give it all for 50K, and that's fine. And it's my part of the race. And I really learned to first to do that, and then to actually like really enjoy it. We had a few like races with really punchy climbs. My job was to survive over the climb so I could get back into the front group on the descent and work for the climber on the valley. And it was like 20 climbs like this, and I was just doing that. And I really enjoyed that. And then just the simple things that scared me were like going back to the car to get bottles and then getting back into the bunch, going through everyone and distributing bottles. First races, I was struggling with that. But then when I did the Vuelta a España, I had to learn that and just do it and not be scared of it anymore, because we needed so many bottles all the time.
So good that you mentioned this. I'm not sure. Have you watched today? Was a release of the second episode of the Swift Academy finals?
I haven't watched any of them.
Oh, I don't want to spoil too much, but like one part is like how they learn to grab the bottles, and I thought this was like really interesting. It's like something as a spectator, when you just watch racing, you wouldn't necessarily think of it being a difficult thing, but the whole process around it, like, you know, like dropping back, holding the bottle, getting instructions, actually not losing the bottles, taking all the bottles, go with more weight back into the same position you were before. I think this
Like how many bottles can you fit down your jersey?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd never done that. And just before I think it was actually on the 31st of December of 22. So just before joining the Continental team, I asked my brother to go in the car with me. We filled up like 20 bottles, and he was just giving me bottles. I was putting them in my jersey and giving them
bottles
back. And we spent like 2 hours doing that. Well, I didn't put 20 in them, but we brought as many as possible. And I know I put way too many in a race I would never do.
That's so amazing. These are all the endless hours in the shades that nobody actually sees, right? Like all the additional training that nobody really knows. Like everybody just sees you racing and things like, oh, easy. But then this is those are the untold stories, right?
Yeah, it's not that easy at 50K an hour to take your hands off the handlebars and put bottles in your bag.
That's great.
And then catch up with the bunch if they're attacking or something. It's not that easy.
That's amazing. You look like at the front like a kangaroo and at the back like a turtle.
Yeah.
So good to see. So good to see. How is the decision made, actually? Who is the... This is also something like for me as an outstander. Like I know a little bit, obviously, but... do you know before the race that this is your responsibility for the day, or do race tactics also change during the race and you all of a sudden like get a dedicated bottle carrier, like because somebody else is too far back? Or
yeah, it can vary. Like we go into most races, we have a plan, and like our DSs as a team and the DS team, they kind of look at all the riders that they've taken to the race and everyone's strengths and how we can best utilize everyone's strengths. And you always go in with a plan, but obviously people can puncture, people can crash, people can feel ill, like things can change. And then you kind of have to like communicate with each other, go back to the car, find out how the plan may change. Or if it's a stage race, you could go in with a plan, but if someone crashes on stage one and they lose 20 minutes, it's going to be a different role. So yeah, normally like sports directors decide it, and then if we have radios we can use, like speak to them during the race, but it ultimately you're really lucky if everything plans out the way you intended it and nothing goes wrong.
That's also
a skill. Good day.
It must also be a skill with race radios, right, in your ear, like when you're like when somebody constantly tells you what to do and you're like, oh, I can't, I'm tired.
A lot of white noise a lot of the time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, but it is really, they're really helpful because communication helps a lot. because that's the thing. You go into the race with a plan, but it's cycling and everything might change in a second. And being able to like be comfortable communicating with your teammates, like even if you have a plan and you know you need them to go harder or even to go a bit slower, having radios, just you can talk with everyone and change plans as you need to, even though it is a lot of white noise usual.
I think it was, wasn't it Mike Tyson who said everybody has a plan until you get a slap in the face?
Yeah.
It's so cool. Thank you so much for this. This is really, really good. And I guess like with the right team dynamics, you can obviously, like when you have a nice team around you, you can respond to all the challenges that might come your way on the road, but also maybe off the bike and stuff like this. I think it's always great to have a team. And I guess like the team that is put together there with Das Hutchinson brother is definitely a really nice bunch of people. So I think you're in a good place there. That's all so fascinating. Thank you so, so much. As you might know, our theme is the best stories have not yet been written. So I'm really, really intrigued to if you have any idea or any thought of fast forward to the end of 2024 and look back to this season, Vera, for your first season with a UK team, but also Frankie with your first full season with this new team, what would it be? What would be the headlines be that you would like to read about yourself? Or if it's not a headline, but what would you like to have achieved that would make you really happy?
What would make me really happy is to know that I've had a happy season, that I did races that I enjoyed, and that I used my knowledge from the previous year to this year to not make the same mistakes and to hit the ground running with races, and yeah, to have had good results with the team throughout the season.
Oh, lovely. May I ask, what were the mistakes that you don't want to do again?
I think in the first races, I was expecting it to be a bit easier than it was, or to not be, to feel a bit more in control. And I felt out of control, and I thought I was the only one feeling like that. And then I started to realize that I need to know my strengths. I need to know that I'm good in this part of the course, and I'm going to be struggling in that part, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that if you get dropped at a certain point, but you're better at descending, you're going to get back and you're going to have your job. And yeah, I think that's not stressing too much and knowing that everyone's suffering.
So the headline would be, while everybody was suffering, Vera remained in control and smashed the UK race team.
It's mostly, if you're hurting, the other ones are hurting as well.
So good. And Frankie, what would be the things that you would like to take with you into the next year?
I think I'd really like to find my feet as like kind of what rider I am, and in the international racing as well. I know my physical strength, so it's learning how to use them best in like the pro races, and yeah, carry on to another year of racing in those fields.
So basically, Frankie Hall has finally found her feet.
Yeah.
Would be the title.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. I'm really, really excited to see you guys racing. Really, really, I can't wait to see first results, and hope to hear all about it maybe at some point later in the year, or maybe in the beginning of next year again or something like that. That would be really nice. Is there anyone that you would like to like say thank you for all the ongoing support? Like I think Frank, you mentioned multiple times like Loughborough University, that they were quite supportive throughout your career.
For me, obviously, like the team and Hansling and all of our other sponsors at the team, Das Cycling too. But then personally, the Performance Academy that we have at Loughborough have been amazing. My coach, Paddy, is my coach, my therapist, my friend. He does everything. So yeah, he definitely keeps my head screwed on. And yeah, so massive thanks to him.
Paddy, well done. And Vera?
I think it's my family. I started sports really, really early, and if it wouldn't be for my parents and my brother traveling around, taking me to all these races, getting me the kit that I needed at the time, I wouldn't have been able to even dream of being an elite athlete. And even nowadays, they still support me, and they're on board, and they love watching me race. So yeah, they're my biggest supporter, definitely.
So good, it's so good. It takes a team, right? It's so important. As we mentioned earlier, like there's so many things that happen in the shadows and in the shades that nobody knows about. So yeah, it's really, really good. Our listeners come from all sides of cycling, so not necessarily in racing, so they might not know much about you now, well, they know everything about you, but they didn't know you that much before. Like, if they want to follow you, where can they do that?
On Instagram.
Is it on Instagram? Not TikTok.
No TikTok for me. Okay.
For me, maybe. I'm considering. I'm very good in dance. No, I'm not so good in dead dancing, but anyways. That would be just your name, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And Frankie for you?
Yeah, mine is just my name, FrankieHall04, I think. I have delved into the depths of TikTok, but yet to make some proper TikToks.
Yeah.
Maybe when we get on some team weekends and races.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. And this is so funny, like that you guys mentioned Instagram, because we said this before we started our recording, that my wife is actually like following Frankie much, much longer than I actually did. And when she found out that I had you on the podcast today, she was like super excited. She's like, oh, amazing. And she told me all this thing, everything that I asked today, basically, I knew from my wife. She's like, can you ask her that, please?
Yeah.
So that was really cool. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me today. And for our listeners, if you have any questions, please send a message to podcast@villocino.com. If you don't, reach out directly via Instagram, and I'm happy to pass on the questions. And support us wherever you can. The more listeners, the more fun, the more feedback, the more interaction we get. And you find us on Spotify, Apple, iTunes. Well, you listen to us already, so follow us there. Give a review, 5 stars. Only accepted. And follow us on Instagram. If you want to follow me personally for whatever reason, it's niels.ben.villocino, and I will answer your questions there as well. So what do we do now? Go out, ride your bikes, and remember, the best stories have not yet been written. And Frankie, you have to go out tomorrow and smash it. Absolutely.
So yeah, hopefully.
Thank you so much, and
thank you.
We're out. Da-dum.